You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
It sometimes seems as though that old dog of yours is just being cantankerous. It starts to have accidents in the house. Must be too lazy to go outside. And then there's that thing that it's doing at night. For years, it's slept at the foot of your bed, and now it's roaming around the house at all hours, and you're not getting any sleep. And last week, it got stuck in a corner, started barking, and wouldn't back up. He reminds you of your old Aunt Millie who has Alzheimer's. Do dogs get dementia? Today's guest is Dr. Elizabeth Head. She's an associate professor at the University of Kentucky. She's been studying the aging canine brain in hopes of finding answers to what is also happening, besides to dogs, to dogs' best friend, man. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Listen, cat people, it's just litter. Until you realize those big boxes mean big smells, big messes, and big money. Switch to World's Best Cat Litter, the only litter with concentrated power. It guarantees less smells, less work, all with less litter. Try the small bag that lasts one cat 30 days and you'll realize it's just litter, unless it's World's Best Cat Litter. Find it at Target, Walmart, and at your local grocery and pet stores.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Head, thank you. This is a topic that I see way too often. Dogs, cats coming through the door, and since I just recently had a birthday, I'm concerned about myself.
I think a lot of us are, actually. That's why I think this work is so much fun to do.
Now, most people hear doctor, and yes, you are a doctor, and typically I have veterinarians on my show, but you're a PhD. Tell us about your background, how you got into this area.
Actually, it started when I was an undergraduate student at the University of Toronto, and my mentor there was approached because a company was interested in developing a drug to treat doggy dementia, essentially. But what was interesting, of course, was there was no real systematic study of whether or not old dogs, just like old people, develop learning and memory problems. And if some of those become so severe, it's like a doggy dementia. So that's actually how I kind of got started on it.
Now, what is the difference between, and sometimes I throw these terms out and interchangeably, and I have a feeling I'm doing this incorrectly, dementia and Alzheimer's. They're not one and the same, are they?
Well, dementia is just a kind of global term that describes people who have a loss in function to the point where they're incapacitated. Now, dementia can be caused by many different kinds of things. The most common cause of dementia is Alzheimer's disease. So Alzheimer's disease describes the kinds of pathology you get in the brain that cause that patient to develop learning and memory problems.
How common is Alzheimer's in people, and can we say how common it is in pets?
As I said, it's the most common cause of dementia in the elderly, and the numbers are rising. Unfortunately, I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but they're getting to be a scarily high number. In dogs, there's not as many studies describing how many old pet dogs suffer from maybe a doggy form of dementia, but I think the same thing applies, and that is our dogs are getting older and older because we have better food, we take better care of them, better medical care. So the number of dogs that are going to start showing these problems is probably rising in parallel to what we see in people.
I definitely am seeing much older dogs. I would say when I first graduated from veterinary school, and I graduated back in 1982, that, you know, a dog that lived to be maybe 10 was really an old dog. And now I'm getting 15, 16, 17 years of age, even with some of these really large breeds of dogs where previously, you know, they never made it to that age. So yes, pet owners are doing such a fabulous job and veterinary medicine is helping. So it's really working together. When you're seeing these changes going on, and I read someplace, I think it was even your article, that said about every 67 seconds, Alzheimer's is being diagnosed in a person in the United States. And I do agree with you. I am seeing many dogs coming through the door, these older dogs, who just are starting to lose it in a way. And it can really be very disruptive. And people are thinking, I need to put this pet down because I can't stand being awake all night. I can't do it. And he's barking incessantly. What have you been able to determine as to the cause of Alzheimer's in people? And how do you know those same things are going on in dogs?
Well, we think there are two kinds of pathology that we see in the brains of people with Alzheimer's disease. And those are called senile plaques and neurofibrillary tangles. In dogs, as it turns out, they naturally develop these senile plaques, just like people. In fact, the protein in those plaques is identical to people. Wow. And this is very unique to dogs and cats and a few other animals, but it does not happen naturally in mice and rats. So we think that some of the reasons, or at least we can explain some of the behavioral changes in older dogs based upon these senile plaques we're seeing in their brains.
Hmm. Now, here's a simplistic question. When you have a person that you think has Alzheimer's, there is not a definitive test where you can take a biopsy to say, or can you take a biopsy to determine, this is the disease you have. Isn't it pretty much a rule out disease? It's not this, this, or this, so we call it Alzheimer's?
The good news is we've evolved from that. It used to be that, exactly that case, that you had to rule out a number of other comorbidities or other medical issues that could lead to dementia. It's also very true we don't have a test for Alzheimer's disease, so there's no blood test per se that we can take to say that we have the disease or not. What we typically do in patients with Alzheimer's is the reason we can detect it, and we're getting very, very good at detecting it earlier. The clinicians are doing a terrific job, is you look for change over time. That is your biggest sign that something is happening. And the same thing, I think, applies to dogs, that really what you're looking for is a change in behavior or a change in function over time. And it tends to be a little gradual and subtle. And those would be your earliest signs. Potentially something is going on with your older dog.
I think that's one of the reasons why I so commonly stress that people take their pets, even young, old, especially as you start getting older, might even need to take them in twice a year just for a wellness exam. Because sometimes, you know, I'll just start chatting, oh, are there any medical issues? Oh, no, no, doc, everything is fine. Well, how about behavioral? Oh, yeah, this dog is driving me crazy. Or this cat is doing some bizarre things it never did before. And they don't think much of it until all of a sudden you start talking about it more and going, oh, I think this may be a sign of dementia. Oh, really? Is there anything we can do for it?
Right. And I think that's a really good point. One of the things that, especially I think for older animals, you do actually have to rule out a number of potential contributors to a change in behavior, as you well know. For example, arthritis will slow an animal down, could lead to being up at night because they're uncomfortable, they're in pain. Changes in their vision, changes in their hearing may all look like they don't recognize you anymore, or they're not signaling in the right place to go out. So in the case of older dogs in particular, it's really helpful to rule out and keep on top of other medical issues. And that way, once those are all ruled out, you're kind of left with the understanding these behavioral changes are probably because of something that's happening in the brain. And there are things potentially that you can do as a pet owner to help your older dog deal with these behavioral changes.
You were talking a little bit about these plaques and tangles that are going on in the brain. How can you see those? Does it have to be on a biopsy? Is there new imaging that can be done to see those types of changes?
In people, there are imaging techniques. It's newer and it's really very exciting. We can use PET imaging and compounds that will bind to these plaques in the brain, and you can see them by imaging. What's interesting is there are people who have these plaques in their brains, but they're not showing signs of dementia. So we have to follow them and see what happens. In dogs, unfortunately, the plaques that they develop don't bind to these compounds very well. So we can't see by imaging yet. And I'm hoping on the horizon we're going to have better compounds that will bind dog plaques. So we can't see by, say, a PET scan that they have plaques in their brains. And it's also interesting to note that neurofibrillary tangles are a human-specific pathology. No animal naturally develops that pathology. So we think it's the plaques that are really important for dementia for those reasons. Biopsies are really, they haven't been done in a very, very long time. Certainly in people, the last thing you want to do is to take a little piece of brain to look. It's not, you know, you don't want to also cause a problem. The same thing would apply for dogs. So the best indicator at this point is change in behavior. And there might be some measures we can get from cerebral spinal fluid looking at different proteins. And we're always working on trying to find proteins in the blood that's easy to get that might tell us something is going in a direction that we need to pay attention to.
Now, various breeds, talked earlier about those giant breed dogs that just don't live as long. And then you have those little poodlettes that seem to live forever, especially if they're the ones that like to gnash and bite and chew on your ankles. Are you finding a difference? I believe that you basically been studying beagles, but have you found a difference in various breeds of dogs?
That's a great question. We do focus mostly on beagles just because of their availability. And so most of my work is focused on that. However, we've had some really wonderful pet owners who have been convinced their dogs have a dementia and they've donated their brains to our lab so we can then take a look. There is some evidence out there that some breeds might be a little more vulnerable to these changes than other breeds. For example, beagles actually do get a lot of plaques, surprisingly enough, because they are a smaller dog and they live longer. Another example is boxers apparently do get lots of plaques, and some think that's because of the natural sleep apnea that they develop, which could lead to more vulnerability in the brain. So the short answer is we don't really know exactly yet what breeds might be more vulnerable or not, but I'm hoping over time with kind donations of our friends in the pet community that we'll be able to learn a little bit more about it. But I think offhand, the big dog, small dog difference is a big, big one because the bigger dogs don't live as long, so their aging process is probably more rapid, in which case they might show these signs at a younger age than a smaller dog. So that's something a pet owner could be aware of as well as the veterinarians.
You're talking about research, and oftentimes people, you know, are very concerned about what's happening to these beagles in a research colony, and then they're being killed, and there's a lot of concern. Could you explain a little bit about, do you actually have a colony? What happens to these dogs?
So we don't have any right now. We are between studies. So we don't have any animals right now. The beagles that we get are bred, they're purpose bred for research. So they've never been pet dogs. And typically what happens in our research studies is we want to provide them with an environment that is so as similar to people as we can. It helps our research and it helps our understanding. So a lot of our research looks at lifestyle changes and diet changes, which are very kind of fun studies. They're good studies. Dogs are given toys, they have kennel mates, indoor-outdoor runs, and they get different food formulations that we think is going to make them healthier. So on the end of kind of animal research, I would like to say that we are probably on the more positive end. And yes, at the end, we do need to look at their brains because we want to take that information back to the veterinary community. So the food we developed or the drug that we're testing might be good for pet dogs. We also would like to take that to human clinical trials, and we need to make sure it's safe for everybody.
You're talking about diet. And diet is one of these things, you hear that, okay, you're supposed to go onto the paleo diet, or you're supposed to have gluten-free diets, or Mediterranean. What are you finding so far? What can I have for dinner tonight?
Actually, I think it's funny. A lot of the diet studies are kind of confirming what I think we all kind of know. So the work that we've done in dogs, we've provided them with a diet rich in antioxidants. So their food was fortified with fruits and vegetables, with vitamin E and vitamin C, although dogs make their own vitamin C, and some other cofactors we think would really improve how they feel and how they think. And so when you think about taking that to people, there's some really strong evidence from epidemiological studies that people who eat a Mediterranean diet, for example, seem to be protected from Alzheimer's disease. But it's really, really hard to do diet studies in people because everybody has a different content of food. However, I think consistently, antioxidants have come out as a winner in many studies, but mostly when you look at the kinds of food people eat, not the vitamins or supplements they're taking. It's better, and I think what we learned from our dogs, it is much, much better to get all of these nutrients in your food and not through a pill.
You just answered one of my questions I was thinking, because I have to admit that my diet sometimes is lacking. But I try to make myself feel better by having my plethora of various vitamins and minerals and supplements. And it's like, well, sounds like I'm cheating. It's not really working.
Well, there's absolutely nothing wrong with taking a multivitamin, because we do. I mean, we're all busy. We're all traveling. Sometimes it's just hard to get that good food in you. I think where I hesitate is the evidence saying that, for example, if somebody took super high doses of vitamin E or C would be the way to go. That would I would be a little more hesitant about, because all those vitamins kind of recycle each other, and you don't want to overwhelm your system with one thing or another. The best thing to do is to eat a diet rich in fruits and vegetables. That's going to be the best thing for your brain.
I think oftentimes when I have a pet that comes in and I refuse to call a pet fat. I think it hurts the owner's soul more than it hurts the pet. But you know, they're kind of on the chunky monkey side. And yes, I'm not totally mean. I'm going to tell you to cut back on treats and snacks and watch how much the pet's eating. But give the pet carrots, give the dog carrots. And people look at me like I have Alzheimer's, because how can you give a dog carrots? Going, they love it. And you might need to try it a couple of times to make sure that they know they love it. But it's sweet, it's crunchy, it's chewy. And if they see you eating one, part of that Mediterranean diet, maybe you'll both actually benefit from it.
I think that's totally fine. I know that there are some foods that dogs can't eat. I'm not an expert on that, but there is no reason not to do something of that type, or at least pay very close attention to the senior dog diet that you're buying and see if it's enriched in antioxidants. It's only going to be a good thing. And obesity is something that we should all be a little careful about, because obesity can lead to diabetes, and diabetes is a risk factor for Alzheimer's disease. So Think about trying to just reduce all your risk factors, which you can do with your lifestyle, and the same thing applies exactly to your older dog, making sure that they're not overweight, making sure they have a good diet, and making sure they have exercise. What's good for your heart is good for your brain. So they're kind of common sense ideas, but it's so difficult sometimes to implement them in real life.
How does exercise help? You know, you think, all right, maybe it helps the joints and they're a bit more supple, and all right, you have a little bit of excitement and enrichment because you're out there, your dog, and you're sniffing, and you're seeing the world, and you're smelling the world. But why else is exercise important?
I think one of the key things exercise is good for, there's a couple of interesting things about exercise. So number one is it's terrific for your heart and your cardiovascular system. Your brain probably receives most of the oxygen that you generate, that you take in. And a lot of people who die with Alzheimer's disease also have a lot of vascular problems in their brains. So we know these two events happen together. So if you can reduce that risk factor, then exercise is terrific. It's also interesting that in studies, particularly in rats, and we've done a few exercise studies in dogs too, there are some changes that happen in the brain that are wonderful. That includes the brain can generate new neurons. Now, probably not enough neurons to totally repair Alzheimer's, but if you think the more exercise you get, the more neurons potentially and connections you're forming in your brain, that might buffer Alzheimer's disease pathology and delay or slow down the onset of the disease. So there's also the release of growth factors in the brain when you exercise. Not to even mention all the enrichment, like you mentioned, that being out, you know, seeing things, talking to people, talking to your dog are all things that your brain really likes, and especially likes it as it gets older.
I'm chatting right now with Dr. Elizabeth Head. She's an associate professor at the University of Kentucky, giving us some great information on how we can try to keep our own brain sharp and that of our pets. So during this short break, don't go anywhere, but talk to your pet, maybe jog in place. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Hi, Jill. I see you and Bella are enjoying this lovely day as well.
It's a perfect day for a walk. Isn't that right, Bella?
And what a colorful ID tag you have, Bella. It certainly puts my Rusty's boring engraved tag to shame.
Isn't it great? It's a dog tag art tag.
Dog tag art?
Yeah, dog tag art makes the world's coolest pet ID tags. Pick from hundreds of cute designs or upload your photos or artwork to create a unique tag of your own. They even give you 4 lines of text on the back of the tag for important contact information.
I love it! But do they hold up? We have to replace Rusty's metal tags so often because the information wears away.
Dog tag art tags are some of the highest quality pet tags out there. They're made with super durable stainless steel. Your information is always legible, and the tags are guaranteed for life.
Well, I'm sold. Where can I get my dog tag art tag for Rusty?
DogTagArt.com.
Sounds great! We can't wait to get online and get a tag of our own.
DogTagArt.com. We keep best friends together. Use the coupon code RADIO for a 25% discount off any tag.
Active for Pets is a new wellness platform and app that helps pet parents save time and money on their vet bills. Stop paying for unnecessary vet treatments. Consult with a vet online. Get unlimited access to your pet's entire health history from any computer or smartphone with the Active for Pets app. Vaccinations, medications, test results, and more. Active for Pets gives you access to a team of expert vets for non-emergency care. Make an appointment before, during, or after office hours. Skip the waiting room and get a secure online vet consult on your schedule. Taking care of your pets is as easy as it gets with Active for Pets. Ready to try Active for Pets? Listeners get 40% off a 1-year membership. To get this great offer, use promo code PETLIFE on the sign-up page of active4pets.com. That's ACTIV, the number 4, PETS.com. Or call 888-512-2848.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Head, I love your idea. And again, thank you so much. This is just fascinating information. I love the idea of exercising. So we're exercising our body. How about exercising our brain? You know, we hear about this website that you can go to, and I've gone to it too, to exercise your brain. And I'm so glad that nobody else knows what I'm doing on some of these little puzzles, because some of them I'm very challenged and I haven't been able to really do as well as I would like to. How do we challenge our dog brains? And how did you, with your study, how did you figure out if these dogs can remember things?
So we looked at that in some detail because that's another one of these very, very potent effectors of whether or not somebody develops Alzheimer's disease. If you, for example, if you have a higher level of education, you typically are more protected from Alzheimer's disease. We are trying to understand why that is, but it could be because the more enrichment you have in your life, the more crossword puzzles you do, leads to more neurons in your brain and more connections, again, kind of buffering what happened when you develop Alzheimer's disease. So when we looked at this in dogs, all of our studies, what we need to understand with our dogs is, are they remembering things better and are they learning things more easily? Because that's what people care about when somebody has Alzheimer's disease. They want to know that they're going to remember better. So all of our studies involve looking at learning and memory, and we use a lot of entirely reward-motivated tasks to ask them how well do they remember information. So I can give you a quick example. One is we might show them 2 red Lego blocks, and we put a food reward under one side, and they have to remember to pick that object again later. So that tells us they've remembered the information we've shown them. And we can make that test harder and harder by increasing the time they have to remember. So this is how we find out if our dogs are remembering information better. So the same kind of thing, the whole process of just getting that information from our dogs is also making their brains better on top of it. So the more we train them, in other words, the more school they go to, the better they do. We have some very strong evidence that training your dog, working with your dogs, learning new things is all, again, really terrific for your brain.
I have several clients. I have a practice that is surrounded by a retirement community. And some of my clients come in and they put me to shame with how extremely sharp and intelligent, and they're learning new languages and they're doing all these things. And, you know, I'm 89 years of age. And it's like, oh my goodness, I feel so deficient. And then I have some of my sweethearts coming in who just really are having a difficult time with dementia issues. Same things happening to our pets?
Definitely, I think so. I think the more experiences a dog has, the more things that they've learned to do, the better protected they are if they're going to develop this problem. And it's also those kinds of higher forms of learning that are the ones that start to suffer earliest in the disease and the ones that people pick up on earliest. So all that to say, these online questionnaires or little mind games that you play, they're intended to be more and more difficult because you're trying to make your brain work. So if you're getting perfect all the time, you're probably not helping your brain that much.
Oh, I'm helping my brain a lot.
There you go.
Far from perfect.
And I have the same problem, trust me. So even with your dogs, you know, just keep working with them, getting them new play toys, new stimuli are all wonderful. Except I think when you get into a phase where maybe your dog does have early forms of dementia, and then sometimes changing the environment too much or bringing in a new dog, for example, might be more stressful than good. So that's something that a veterinarian and a pet owner need to discuss and come to a consensus on and what might be best for that animal.
So even though a pet is old, again, Dr. Head, you can still train it. It may not be, as I understand, may not learn as quickly as its younger counterpart, but it can still learn, and we still need to have an old dog learn new tricks.
I think that's exactly right. And our experience so far that when we just take a whole bunch of old dogs, old beagles, and try to teach them a new problem, what we find is a third of them, give or take, are just as smart and as quick as young dogs. Okay. Just like we know our own Aunt Millie, who is sharp as a tack. Then we have about another third of dogs that they are a little slower, but they get there. Okay. And then we have the last third of dogs, which can't get there at all. Doesn't matter how long we work with them, they cannot learn to answer or solve that problem. And that's where I think they kind of fall in closer to people with Alzheimer's disease, that it doesn't matter how long you work with somebody, it's just they can't make those links. So all that to say that in many ways, old dogs are very plastic. In other words, you can get their brains to function better, recognizing there might be a smaller group who might be already into a disease process that's just not going to work as well, although that doesn't mean you shouldn't do it.
You're talking about exercise, talking about diets, and then a lot of us are somewhat lazy and we just want that pill. We want the pill that's going to make the Alzheimer's go away. We're going to lose our weight and our heart's going to be strong. Is there anything that's out there that we still know we need to do our exercise, watch our diets, keep our health, our heart healthy? But what type of medications are out there now that may help those that they've done that and it's just we need some assistance?
That's a really good point, especially when you think about geriatric populations trying to exercise. If there's other health problems or arthritis that makes it very challenging, they simply can't get that exercise. There are a number of groups that are working on what they're calling mimetics. So essentially, is once we understand what happens in the brain when we exercise or when we eat a diet rich in antioxidants, then we can identify proteins that are important, and then maybe we can develop a medicine that will change that protein in the direction we want it to go. So there might be on the horizon a pill for exercise, although I think exercise is one of the more challenging ones because the systemic effects, the benefits to bones, to muscle, to heart, to everything far exceeds, I think, what could be captured in a pill.
So stay on that treadmill, get that pet out, go for a walk. Okay, so that pill's not out there. But how about what can be done for our mental decline? There are medications I know that when I diagnose a dementia in a pet, there are a few medications that will sometimes, as I tell people, it's not going to totally turn the light bulb back to bright as it was when it was a pup, but maybe it'll turn the voltage up a little bit so we're more home than not.
And you know what? Those medicines are available for patients with Alzheimer's disease. There's 5 approved medicines. However, they typically only help to improve the symptoms. They don't actually necessarily affect the disease itself or slow it down. And just like with pet dogs, not everybody responds equally well to them or for a very long time. So a lot of the research in the Alzheimer's world is dedicated to understanding ways to slow the disease itself. For example, there's vaccines that are being worked on quite heavily and are very promising that might really slow down a disease in a person to a point where maybe they stall out completely and they don't get worse at all. So that's our, you know, our hope in the future. The same thing is being applied to dogs. So we've done a lot of work looking at a vaccine that will clear the plaques from dogs' brains. However, we're learning now that we need to do that vaccine younger, before they actually get the pathology, partly because once you get the plaques and tangles, and this happens in people too, it starts to hurt your brain cells, and your brain cells can't function, and then they start to die. You can't bring those cells back in the brain. So the cells we have in our brain are as old as we are. They can be over 110 years old. So what we're learning more and more now is the best thing is to use prevention. And it is a very, very active area of study in the Alzheimer's world. So I wish there was a pill now that I could say would be helpful. But as I said, there's only 5 approved for Alzheimer's, and there hasn't been any new ones for a very, very long time. But there are other kinds of medicines also that can just help with kind of the daily behavioral changes that are very distressing to families and to the patient. I think the same thing would apply to older dogs, that if they're showing more anxiety, for example, there's medications for that that might help.
So as I'm hearing you, Dr. Head, it sounds as though we should be proactive, start eating well, start exercising while you're young. And if it does occur and you have been not the most athletic or the most dedicated to your studies and doing your crossword puzzles, is there still hope that when you have that older beagle, you are the older pet owner, that you can maybe now say, okay, I'm sorry, I promise I'll try harder. And if I start eating better and exercising, will that still help?
It will definitely help. I think the good news, and what we've learned a lot from our research, is it's never too late. It really is never too late. Even in somebody with advanced Alzheimer's, there's lots of things that you can do to enrich their lives, that they are perkier, more attentive, and they feel better. So the same thing applies to dogs and people without Alzheimer's disease. Even if you're in your 60s, 70s, and 80s, which are equivalent years in your dogs being older, it is, all of our work has shown that diet and exercise and all of this cognitive training it can help quite a bit. And in some cases, depending on the scenario, it could bring some of our older dogs to a functional level similar to our younger dogs. So the take-home message on this is it's never too late, and go out and exercise with your dog.
Well, we're going to have to stop this pretty soon so I can go eat some olives, go run a mile, and then come back and do my crossword. We've been talking so much about dogs, and it's fascinating. I'm learning a lot, but I have cats. Anything about cats that you're learning?
You know, cats are, well, we all know cats are a little odd.
Different, yes.
They're different. So what we have learned with cats, we haven't done a lot of work. Again, I ended up with some donations from cat owners, which was just wonderful. And cats also develop these plaques like we see in dogs, but the composition is a little bit different. So it's not quite the same as what we see in people. However, there are a few papers out there suggesting that older cats also show learning and memory problems. But the biggest feature, I think, is they show a lot of behavioral changes. The bottom line being, we really don't know as much about cat aging as we do about dog aging.
Trying to do a brain test on a memory test on a cat is like, really? You figure out which Lego, I'm going to go take a nap.
Pretty much. How do you motivate a cat to work for you, right?
Totally. Dr. Head, this has been fabulous. Now, at your research, tell us a little bit of background again of where you are, what your studies are doing, and some other fascinating things that your center is doing.
So I'm at the Sanders Brown Center on Aging here at the University of Kentucky. And the Sanders Brown Center is focused, has an Alzheimer's disease center. So it's a very active center where patients with Alzheimer's are being seen. And there's a large number of clinical trials that are being run by our neurologists here to try and find ways to, of course, help these people as the disease progresses. So a lot of my research, I also do clinical research, in fact, with people with Down syndrome who are at risk for Alzheimer's disease. What I'm really trying to get at is understanding what changes happen in the blood that maybe we can use as a marker, but also to test out different types of treatments that I think are going to help our older dogs and that I can take to clinic. So lifestyle factors are a big part of what I do, but we've also been looking at vaccines, and we're probably going to start taking a look at drugs that are already out there that might have a surprise benefit in the long run for people with Alzheimer's disease.
Dr. Head, thank you so much for doing this research. My brain feels better already. I'll see if I can stimulate my cats to learn something new today. But I know people, this will be something that touches everybody's heart because our pets age as well as we do. So thank you very much for being with us today.
You're very welcome. My pleasure.
You're listening to Dr. Bernadine Cruz. We've just been listening to Dr. Elizabeth Head, Associate Professor at the University of Kentucky. We'll be back next week. We'll have more information on how to make you the best possible pet owner. Thank you so much for listening.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.